you. We're going to move on to item five, Gamesa Energy USA. Mr. Badger.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Everybody's going to rub that in today.
you're setting up pretty today. Mesa Energy requests authorization to install a single 5-megawatt offshore wind turbine generator prototype and its supporting infrastructure approximately 3 miles southwest of Cape Charles in the lower Chesapeake Bay, west of the county of Northampton. Project location, it's approximately 3 miles offshore. Kind of Cape Charles is in this general area here near the road sign, 13 Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. The turbine itself is located at latitude 37 degrees, 14 minutes, 37.4 seconds north, and longitude 76 degrees, 3 minutes, and 47.3 seconds west. Gamesa Energy is a manufacturing company principally involved in the manufacturing and fabrication of wind turbines and the construction of wind farms. Gamesa develops, manages, and sells wind farms for which it also supplies wind turbines. And this project is a joint venture with Newport News Shipbuilding. The proposed project will advance the demonstration of Gamesa's new offshore wind technology. The turbine will be specifically designed for deployment in offshore wind environments worldwide and will also produce up to 5 megawatts of renewable wind power for delivery to the local Virginia transmission grid for public use. The installation of the turbine is scheduled for late 2013, and then the life expectancy is anticipated to be more than 20 years. And the cable that will be running inshore, the life expectancy there is for over 100 years. A little background here. You guys may remember from last year in March that Gamesa came in front of you for a study to determine the location of a wind turbine prototype. The original locations of the study areas were offshore farther and in deeper water, and because of that, we got a few concerns from the Virginia Pilots Association and the Virginia Maritime Association. And their concerns were the location of the anchorage of the overflow from the Hampton Roads anchorage as they come up and use this general area. Once that was determined an issue, Gamesa moved their study areas inshore in less water, and the study permit was permitted last year. Since then, Gamesa has come back and located in this permit one site in the study area on the north side. And originally they had some other options in black coming into Bayshore Concrete. For whatever reason, that location into Bayshore was withdrawn, and what you see here in red is the proposed location of the power cable coming into Bay Coastal Railroad in the harbor itself. It's going to be 15,219 linear feet of state waters, and the royalty will be $3 per linear foot for a royalty of $45,657. This is just another blow-up showing you the location of the nearest channels. The federal channel going to Baltimore is over 3.6 miles away, and it's a mile away from the entrance to Cape Charles Harbor. federal channel in here. And again, red is the power cable. And here, we did ask for comments from agencies, state agencies. At this time, we've had a few concerns, but nothing that was much of a problem for us. The Department of Conservation and Recreation states that there's bald eagles and sea turtles in the general portion of the bay, and they recommended coordination with Game and Inland Fish. They also stated that the offshore wind turbine location was within an avian international importance zone. Department of Game and Inland Fish states that the project is consistent with the Virginia Coastal Zone Management Program's fisheries enforcement policy. They also support the selection of the least environmentally damaging and most effective method for the tower construction and cable installation as proposed. Department of Historical Resources states that the project is acceptable. DEQ states that the project will not require a permit provided the applicant receives a Army Corps of Engineers permit. And the Army Corps of Engineers anticipates issuing a nationwide permit for this project sometime after March 19th. A closer view of the cable that's coming in here. There is a permitted project for five breakwaters for the town of Cape Charles in this general area here. Two of them have been built. The other three have not, but it's still an active permit. Because of this, Gamesa decided to go around the structure instead of coming straight through, which was part of their original plan. By doing this, they're avoiding any impacts that may occur from any construction of the three remaining breakwaters. And then it'll just come in here. As you can see right here, this is the jurisdictional boundary line between state-owned waters and the harbor in Cape Charles. The harbor in Cape Charles is man-made or was originally a freshwater lake in this general area here. So our jurisdiction stops right there. The U.S. Coast Guard has expressed safety concerns with the vertical clearance between the tip of the turbine blade when it is at its lowest point in the water, and they're saying it's approximately 46 feet. This is on a storm surge tide. They suggest a census of all the vessels currently using Cape Charles Harbor and the Little Creek area to determine the maximum height of the mast and antennas to evaluate this. We believe this is best addressed through their regulatory review process. Not ours. Cape Charles Wetlands Board approved their portion of the project back on February 29th of this year. Their portion only dealt with where it came to shore, right in this general area here, in the intertidal area. It's an old bulkhead that had failed. If it wasn't for that, they wouldn't have had any jurisdiction. Our Fisheries Management Division states that the proposed wind turbine is acceptable provided there is no restricted area around the structure. They also state that the stone riprap scour protection around the foundation base could indirectly make an artificial reef that the local fishermen may use. No protest to the current application has been received, and aside from the comments provided, no agency has expressed opposition to the project. I will state that VIMS does have a few concerns, and I'll go over those next. This is an aerial taken from last year. As you can see, why the Maritime Association and Pilots Association had some issues. This was the overflow of cargo ships from last year that were in the general area. This is my rendition of the location of the turbine. Again, a little closer view. Cape Charles Channel comes in. You can see the ship comes out like this and continues on in this general area. VIMS indicates that the applicant addresses potential direct marine environmental impacts to the most practical extent possible. They also state that the unavoidable adverse effects to the marine environment will occur during the construction phase, but these are expected to be localized, short-term, and minimal. VIMS does suggest, however, the issue of operational noise distributed locally throughout the water column remains a single issue of potential indirect effect that should be considered. VIMS expects the noise from the wind turbine will have have will not have significant adverse environmental effects on the marine environment. However, they cannot confidently state that this issue is a minor concern. As a result, they're recommending that the commission and the applicant consider using this opportunity to address the issue of the amount and extent of the noise field surrounding the monopile. This is a cross-sectional view. Can you all see this all right, or do you need the lights out?
Okay. It's all right.
Okay. Total height of the wingspan will be 479 feet above mean sea level. The diameter of the blades, 420 feet. The height is approximately 50 feet above high water, and, of course, according to the Coast Guard, 46 feet above storm surge. And it should be in approximately 53 feet of water. I don't know if you can see it, but the cable comes off, goes underneath, and just continues on into shore. And here's the scour protection. This is the monopile itself. It's 18 and a half feet in diameter. And then the scour protection, which is going to be stone around it. The scour protection will be 16,186 square feet, and the royalty on that will be 35 cents a square foot. The monopile itself is 269 square feet at $5 a square feet for a royalty for this portion of the project of $7,010.10. This cross section showing that the scour protection will be 6 feet above the bottom, so you should have a clearance of 47 feet. Above this. As you can see, the overall scour protection is 181 feet in one direction, 129 in the other. So it's a fairly large, somewhat of a reef there. The watermen should love it. This is how they're going to bury the cable. They'll be jetting it in here on a sled. Cable comes down, it's being pulled. Jets it around it, and then it just falls back in. And shortly, probably within a couple of weeks, you won't even know that it's there. Cable will be buried down to a minimum of 6 feet, and the width of the trench when they jet it out will be 2 feet wide. Again, a little closer view. Yeah. 2 feet, minimum of six. This is the diameter of the cable itself. It's 4 inches, and just how it's going to be placed in the cable. I find these to be pretty interesting. I don't know if y'all can see it, but the Mesa was nice enough to show us what it's going to look like, their rendition. There it is right there. This is looking southwest from Bay Creek Marina, which is at the mouth of Kings Creek. This is from the Cape Charles beachfront. The harbor is here, and the next shot will be on the fishing pier, which is farther out than this. And that's from the Cape Charles harbor. It's approximately 3 miles. Summary and recommendations. Staff believes that since the U.S. Coast Guard considers the wind turbine a private aid to navigation, the Coast Guard must review the installation of the wind turbine. If the Coast Guard regulations require additional vertical clearance for safety, then the applicant could request a modification to their VMRC permit. While Department of Conservation and Recreation states that the offshore project is within the Avian International Zone, important zone, recently established, or DEQ recently established and now administers the small renewable energy permit by rule program, and which is authorized by code, that considers avian impacts. As such, the commission staff believes any avian impacts have been addressed as part of the permit by rule. With regards to VIMS's comments, staff believes an acoustic monitoring study may be beneficial to both the Commonwealth and the wind industry that designs and uses and use of state and offshore waters for energy generation. Therefore, after evaluating the merits of the project and after considering all the factors contained in 28.2.1205A of the code, staff recommends approval of the project as submitted with the specific permit conditions or special permit conditions listed below. Since the project represents a first of its kind in Virginia waters, we believe these permit conditions are necessary, especially with regard to the eventual removal and decommissioning. The posting of a bond, letter of credit, or a financial instrument to fund removal and for potential transfer. Furthermore, with a royalty, while a royalty is also recommended, it is currently based on the Commission's established royalty schedule for encroachment over state-owned and submerged lands, which, when developed, did not specifically address this type of project. Excuse me. Since this is essentially a research turbine that will hopefully advance opportunities for offshore wind development as well as the development of wind energy industry in Virginia, we believe the proposed royalty is adequate, especially combined with the acoustic study we feel should be required. While further turbines in Virginia waters may require additional royalty considerations, we believe that this is addressed in the special conditions regulations as possible transfer of regarding a possible transfer of the permit or if a request is submitted to keep the turbine in place beyond the initial 20-year period for electrical generation. We have eight special conditions that I've put up here. I'll go through some of them. Number one, permittee shall notify the commission of its date for the start of the construction activities authorized herein, which shall represent the date from which the applicable conditions will apply. Such notice shall be provided 30 days before the construction authorization herein is to begin. Permittee agrees that any change in the physical features of the turbine, including but not limited to the installation of new blades or tower, authorization herein shall be allowed, provided the commission is notified 90 days prior to any change, and this permit is administratively amended to reflect such change. However, if any changes to the physical encroachment location shall be approved by the commission, replacement of components or repair will not require commission notification. Basically, as long as it's repair, we're not going to require anything from them except some notification. If it's changing the footprint, then it would have to go through the normal review process. Number three, permittee agrees the tower and turbine shall be decommissioned if the turbine ceases to operate for 24 consecutive months, assuming the lack of operation is not due to conditions beyond the control of the permittee. The permittee will provide notice to the commission concerning such lack of operation and will have 1 year from that notice to complete the decommissioning plan that is made part of this permit. Any request for extension beyond the initial 20-year term shall be submitted to the commission in writing no less than 1 year prior to the 20th anniversary of the construction commencement date. If extended, the permittee agrees that additional royalties may be required by the commission for the wind turbine permits in accordance with the commission's guidelines in place at the time of the extension. Number four, permittee agrees that a bond, letter of credit, or other financial instrument shall be established to fund the decommissioning plan. Funds for such bond, letter of credit, or other financial instruments shall be made payable to the benefit of the Commonwealth in the event the permittee is unable to implement the decommissioning plan. The bond, letter of credit, or other financial instruments shall be established before construction commences. The minimum bond, letter of credit, or financial instrument shall initially be established at $2,127,675 and shall be updated with a new estimate every 5 years. The permittee may revisit the cost estimate at each period and adjust the amount as may be justified by changing the market and other conditions in the wind industry. This could go up, it could go down. Some of the issues that came up here, why it seemed to be so much money to decommission it, was some of the equipment, or the only equipment that's available right now is down in the Gulf. So the time frame starts when that piece of equipment starts its move up to the Chesapeake Bay and back down. If the wind energy industry takes off on the East Coast, then equipment like that will be based up here, and it could potentially make the cost of decommissioning less. So it's not necessarily one that will always automatically go up every 5 years. Number five, permittee agrees that no construction authorization shall begin until an interconnection agreement has been approved by the appropriate applicable provider for the distribution of electrical power within the local transmission system, or a special use of all electricity generated by the turbine authorized herein has been identified, and there is no distribution to the local transmission system. We're pretty sure it's going to go into the local system, but at this point they have not got the interconnection agreement signed. Number six, permittee agrees that should the permit be transferred, the commission may reassess the need for any additional royalty that may be assessed at the time of transfer based on the use of the turbine for power generation or other experimental commissioning or decommissioning purposes. Any additional royalty shall be assessed in accordance with the commission guidelines in place at the time of transfer. In the event any transfer for this permit or a new bond, letter of credit, or financial instrument shall be established to fund the decommissioning plan. Funds for the bond, letter of credit, or other financial instrument shall be made payable to the benefit of the Commonwealth in the event that the new permit is unable to implement the decommissioning plan. Notwithstanding that the above request, no changes to the bond or additional royalties will be assessed for the transfer to any permittees affiliates. Number seven is just pretty standard, but it would also cover any issues that the Coast Guard may have with the height between the blade in the water. Permittee agrees to comply with all applicable Coast Guard regulations. Number eight basically is going to address what we think is appropriate for the study. A lot of it is just general information, so I'll just read a portion of it. Permittee agrees to conduct an acoustical study to determine the level of sound in the surrounding water column generated by the operation of the permitted turbine and transmitted through the tower. Underwater sound levels will be measured within 2 years of commencement of operation of the turbine at respective locations around the turbine to document the site-specific characteristics of the underwater environment. And beyond the general information that's in here, these measurements will also include non-acoustical data, including but not limited to sea state, water temperature, salinity, current speed and direction, wind speed and direction, air temperature, and precipitation. A report will be prepared and provided to the Commission upon completion of the study. And we also recommend a one-time royalty, standard royalty assessment for the underground cable crossing of 15,219 linear feet of state-owned submerged lands at $3 a square foot, for the stone riprap scour protection at a rate of 35 cents a square foot, and for the steel monopile at a rate of $5 a square foot, for a total royalty of $52,667.10. We have no protest. Unless someone's here today, it's been a fairly clean project, amazingly so, considering it's the first turbine in state waters, and I believe it's probably, if it's built, will be the first one on the East Coast in state waters. Gamesa is well represented here to answer any of the questions.
Any questions for Mr. Badger, Mr. Tankers?
Hank, one more time, would you? I really appreciate those photos you had so we get an understanding from the shore, but I know that I can't figure out exactly where it is relative to, say, the channel markers like 26A that's straight off. You know, I know 50 feet is a depth that a lot of people like to rockfish straight out there, and just trying to understand where this is going to be relative to that recreational fall fleet.
I can't read. There's a buoy there. I really don't know where the fleet is.
Yeah, so Plantation Light, where is that?
Plantation Light's right here.
Okay.
Yeah, we've had no opposition at all.
Okay.
In the bays.
I have too. I am too.
Right. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions. And in one of your cross-section drawings, you indicated that the depth of the cable would be about 6 feet deep. And I would think that that's more than an adequate depth to ensure that there aren't any potential interactions with mobile gear fisheries that you might think of. And I wanted to ask, in the course of the Coast Guard regulatory review, has there been any suggestion from the Coast Guard? I noted that they had raised some concern about the height or the current maximum height of the blade and the clearance there, but has there been any suggestion from the Coast Guard that there would be any restrictions on either recreational or commercial fishing activities in the vicinity of the test site?
They have not. Okay. I've talked directly to them, and it wasn't even what we discussed as an issue. Now, that doesn't mean that next week they couldn't do something, but that will not be staff's recommendation to put any type of restricted zone around it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions?
Yes, sir. Mr. Plummer. I have just a few questions about some of the conditions. You may be able to answer a few. Others might need the response of the applicant, but under condition two, is the idea here any change in the length of the turbine and the vertical distance between the mean high and the turbine? That's going to be decided by the Coast Guard and not by this board?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Do you know the what is the parent company of this LLC?
It's Gamesa Energy.
It's a Gamesa? Okay.
And it's also with, this is a joint venture with New Purdue Shipbuilding. But Gamesa USA is a subsidiary, I understand, of Gamesa, the worldwide company out of Spain.
Okay.
Now, I'm sure that they can clear that up a lot better than I just explained it.
And the only other couple of questions, the permittee agreeing to comply with the Coast Guard regulations is sort of superfluous. I mean, they have to comply with all state and federal laws regardless of any condition here. So that's, you're putting that in specifically because of the vertical distance question, and you want to make sure that there's some attention paid to that?
It's not unusual for us to put that in most of our permits. And it would also have to do with the lighting issues and so forth. A lot of times the Coast Guard will not get back with us in time for the lighting issues, and so we just put it in, make sure that they understand that they need to go talk to the Coast Guard, which they have.
The other two questions I have, the first being the acoustical study. Is that something voluntary from the company that they volunteered to do, or something that we're asking them to do? Because it seems, you know, we're not going to get data back about this study until it's already in operation, so it's not going to really pertain to this particular permit.
I think what we're trying to do here is trying to get a little bit of information for future wind turbines that may be placed in the bay. Now, both VMRC, we recommended it because of VIMS's request, and I believe you all have agreed to that.
Okay, so that's agreed to. And my last question at this time is, you mentioned bringing the equipment up from the Gulf to do the decommissioning of the particular structure. Is that going to be a problem if they're you know, a storm comes and there's some significant damage or some other catastrophe and there needs to be some immediate response. Is that any kind of issue that that's been looked at?
I'll have to answer that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Watkinson, you want to add anything?
No, I just felt maybe I could add to some things Hank had to say, but I think he covered the response to the questions. I just would add with regard to the monitoring condition for the acoustical sound that that was one issue that was identified as a bit of a question. We are comfortable that the acoustic signal from the turbine operation won't be significant. But given this environment in the bay, we've not seen a turbine. We're aware of any research of an acoustic signal in this type of environment. So we just want to know. And if there did happen to be some acoustic signal that presented some issue, then maybe there's some mitigating measures that could be considered in the future as these would go in elsewhere. So it's for, we feel it helps the applicant deal with this down the road, and it helps the regulatory agencies, including the commission, be more comfortable with any future installations of turbines and the effect that it might have on our resources that would use the area. We presented it to the to Gamesa as a proposal from staff. They certainly had some questions about the need and what would be their responsibility, but in the end, they agreed to that condition, and we worked with them very closely on all of these conditions, especially the last one in terms of the language that would be included in the permit.
Thank you.
Commissioner, may I address just a
yes.
brief question that Mr. Plumlee inadvertently raised? Mr. Plumlee, also, with respect to including requirements in the permits for complying with Coast Guard and other federal regulations, even though compliance is required, it's legally prudent for the commission to have that in the permits because then if they violate the permit by violating Coast Guard regs, we don't have to wait for the federal government to step in, which gives us authority to act as a violation of a permit condition.
I just assumed that was one of the... you know, if you violate any other state or federal law, we could pull your permit as well without any specific language, but if that's needed, I'd find
it. It makes it cleaner. It may not be needed, but it takes one step out of the process and convincing the judge.
Thank you. Anything else, Frank? The applicant's present. You wish to be heard. John? John, are you going to have others speak on behalf of the project?
There may be in response to questions, so if you want to swear them out,
yeah,
maybe that would be prudent.
Those who would speak in favor of the project, if you could stand and be sworn, we'll take care of that. Gentlemen, do you solemnly swear the testimony you'll give today to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. For your record, my name is John Daniel. I'm here this morning on behalf of Gamesa Energy, and a privilege to be here for that. Before we begin, just on a personal note, Mr. Commissioner, I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
There are probably few in this room who have worked with you over those 31 years. I'm privileged to be one of them, I think, in various capacities, and certainly know that you will continue the tradition of excellence for those who have sat in that chair before you. So we wish you well.
Thank you.
I am here this morning, members of the commission, on behalf of Gamesa Energy in their efforts with their partner, Newport News Shipbuilding, to locate a single 5-megawatt wind turbine approximately 3 miles off shore of Cape Charles in the lower Chesapeake Bay. That project, which is known as the siting of the G11X turbine, will be located just southwest of Cape Charles, Virginia, off the harbor on Virginia's eastern shore. Also this morning, and while there were a lot of them when Mr. Travel said swore them in, I don't think they'll all speak, but also present are Mr. Dan Renshaw, Gamesa Director of Development for the Atlantic Division, Todd Hopper, the Senior Developer for this project, Doug Law with Newport News Shipbuilding, Mr. Charles Natale, the President and CEO of ESS Group, and a former staff member of this commission, and Mr. Steve Wood also with the ESS Group. Your science advisor, the Institute of Marine Science, has also played a consulting role in this project as we've moved forward. Some of you will recall this project. We appeared before you almost to the day a year ago, seeking your approval to undertake certain geologic and hydrologic studies to determine the suitability of the chosen location to accommodate this turbine foundation. The commission at that time granted that permit, and the resulting remote sensor and acoustical survey work, vibrocore work, and seabed borings resulted, fortunately, in a positive determination of the ability to support the foundation in the chosen location and to verify that construction site. With that study phase now behind us, we now seek from this commission the necessary authority to construct the G11X turbine. That construction encompasses a monopole foundation, which occupies approximately 311 square feet of subaqueous bottom, scour and riprap protection, which occupies approximately 16,244 square feet, and an underwater cable, which is buried approximately 6 feet below the seabed surface and traverses 3.2 miles from the turbine foundation to the shoreline at the bulkhead at the Bay Coast Railroad property. The G11X is a 5-megawatt turbine. It's probably larger than most that you have observed or seen, and it is designed specifically for an offshore water environment. The nacelle component of the turbine, or the generator and the gearbox housing, will be placed on a monopole, which will be attached to that foundation system. The rotor hub, which is attached to the nacelle, will be at a height of approximately 262 to 269 feet above sea level. The total rotor sweep will be approximately 420 feet in diameter. The minimum estimated height with the rotor blade in the 6 o'clock position will be about 52.5 feet above water. That differs a bit from the 46-foot heights you heard from Mr. Badger. He was giving you the storm surge level, and I'm giving you the normal tide level. So there's some difference there. So I wanted to explain that. We appreciate very much the project description and careful analysis that Mr. Badger has just provided. And I want you to know certainly that since we began talking about this project in conception, Mr. Badger and Mr. Wilkinson have been very attentive. They've been questioning, as they should be. I think they've been thorough, and they certainly have been more than fair with us in assessing the project as it matured and as it developed. One item that all the parties focused on, Gamesa, its consultants, and your staff, was notwithstanding the fact that this is a single grant of authority for a single turbine, the process, and hopefully the approval needed to recognize this, will be forthcoming. But when we spoke to you a year ago, we indicated the novelty and perhaps the fact that this would be the first, and certainly was a case of first impression for this commission and in all likelihood for the Commonwealth. I think that remains as true today as it did a year ago. Mr. Watkinson and Mr. Badger and others have thought long and hard on that issue specifically. And the result, I think, of that is a series of proposed conditions which Mr. Badger has relayed to you for safeguarding the public's property and securing the necessary stewardship that goes along with the privilege of utilizing that property. Those conditions are far-ranging, and they address commitment dates, a structured design changes, decommissioning, posting of surety bonds or other financial instruments, the necessity of required interconnection approvals, compliance with Coast Guard regulations, and an acoustic study to be undertaken regarding impacts to fishery resources as a result of the operational turbine. What really needs to be understood is that these conditions are not in any way, shape, or form indicative of any problems that have been known or surfaced as a result of working through this project. But rather, they're proposed, I think, as far-reaching safeguards based on the novelty and the newness of this project for the Commonwealth and for this commission as it goes forward. To our knowledge, there are, as Mr. Badger indicated, no protestants The public interest has not resulted in any adverse comments from state agencies. VIMS, the science advisor to this commission, has been intimate with this project since inception. And in his report to you in March of 2012, Dr. Mann notes, quote, VIMS has been an active supporter of development of alternative energy in the Commonwealth for many years, and we are confident that the development of wind energy industry within Virginia can occur in a sustainable and environmentally sensitive manner. VIMS did raise the issue of an acoustic study, and with their help, with the work of ESS and your staff, the final proposed condition outlines the protocols for that acoustic study. In one of the first ever uses of a new nationwide permit called the Nationwide 52, the Corps of Engineers has indicated to its federal brethren in a March communication of its intent to use this Nationwide 52, which is a new permit, a general permit for water-based renewable energy generation pilot projects. And they anticipate utilizing that for their component and approval of this project. There is virtual unanimous agreement, I think, that the G11X project can advance the ball in the development of renewable energy and can do so responsibly and in an environmentally appropriate manner. As you well know better than I, your considerations of this project are guided by specific parameters found in our code. And first and foremost, your deliberations should consider your fiduciary responsibilities under the public trust doctrine. There is a very limited area will be used for the foundation of this project. It will be protected by riprap, and most folks believe will provide additional fishery habitat. In fact, your science advisor notes, in fact, turbine and scour construction may result in a vibrant and productive ecosystem that proves beneficial to commercial and recreational fishing interests. End quote. The submarine cable will be buried significantly deep, approximately 6 feet, to avoid any impact on the public at large, whether it's through sagging fishery resource or our greatest fear, which would be dragging anchors, which would not be a good thing for our cable. On balance, when considering the public and private benefits and the limited impacts and the potential for the clean, renewable energy, and given the additional safeguards of their proposed staff's conditions, the public trust apparently appears to be clearly achieved. Likewise, fishery resources are safeguarded, perhaps enhanced, as a result of likely increased habitat. The acoustic study provided in the proposed condition provides even greater certainty to that effort. Tidal wetland impacts have been measured and considered and approved by the Cape Charles Wetland Board at their meeting on February 29, 2012. There have been no comments, none, from adjacent property or nearby property owners, notwithstanding the personal notifications, both as a part of the Cape Charles Wetland Board process and as well as the joint permit application process, which is before you today. Finally, neither our underwater investigations as a result of significant studies or those of your staff or the comments of DEMS, DEQ, or other state agencies have raised any concerns regarding negative impacts to water quality or to submerged aquatic vegetations. We would suggest strongly that the requirements of 28.2.1205 are more than met in this case, and the project, as recommended by your staff, with which we agree, warrants your approval. And we trust that you will concur in that. I thank you for your time and for your attention, and either I or the others whom I've introduced to you would be pleased to answer any questions you may have with respect to the G11X.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Daniel? Mr. Plummer?
I have the one question about any type of storm rating for this equipment or any concerns with regards to repair of the structure after storms.
I don't have a direct answer. I know your original question had to do with, because of the rarity of the equipment that was involved in order to construct this, that it might also be a problem should a storm occur and you get the equipment back, I guess. The hope, of course, is that as the industry develops, people recognize that opportunity. And some of these pieces of equipment that are thousands of miles away will be located more approximate. We certainly hope so. The cost of bringing it from the Gulf is not small one. More directly to your question, it's a substantial investment. If the Mesa folks didn't think that they'd be able to deal with storm, and understand that it's a very, it's a very sophisticated piece of equipment. Big storms, it'll feather right down. I mean, it's not going to just keep going, and pick up speed and pick up speed. It's built to withstand storms. This one in particular, because it's the prototype for offshore technologies, we hope, in the future, is even more conscious of that. And, we got the guys who know how to build stuff in the water and make it last to help us. So,
this is a prototype. It's not a design used in another location that's very similar to another design, I guess, into the question.
Well, I think it's an advanced design of things that you've seen before. It's larger, as I indicated, from what you may have likely seen, if you've observed any of these in Europe, as an example. But it's designed to obviously go to market at some point and be the turbine of choice, or some offshoot of it be the turbine of choice when the industry does, in fact, mature.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Tanker?
I have a couple. First, why Cape Charles? I can't remember. You were here a year ago, and you probably explained, or Gamesa did, why they thought Cape Charles was the appropriate place. My curiosity, I can't help myself.
Does my father was from Cape Charles? No. That is true, though. Look, we were looking for locations that could best simulate offshore conditions, and by virtue of historic conditions, perhaps the meteor strike in that neighborhood that gave you the depths of water that were necessary to simulate those conditions, it obviously rose to the top of the list. There was a substantial amount of due diligence in this project in terms of avoidance of this and avoidance of that, and recognition, for instance, even to the point that the town had permitted additional breakwaters, and those needed to be avoided. But I think primarily because of the depth, the reception locally, frankly, the conversations as part of due diligence with individuals, associations, and others indicated that it was a good location. And I would suggest that the fact that there's no one here to suggest it's not, and there hadn't been anybody suggest it's not, as in over a year and a half, sort of speaks to the fact that the process worked, and it was a good location.
Follow-up question is, when you were doing your study, and I suppose I saw the boats out there doing their soundings, et cetera, the probability of a knockdown is an issue on the mainland. Is it the same kind of an issue in the water, a knockdown, a big winds come through like a hurricane force to knock that down?
Mr. Tanker, I'll give you my best answer, and if it's not good enough, we can get a smart guy up here. As I indicated to Mr. Plumley in part response to his question, it's a very sophisticated piece of equipment. I mean, it is designed so that it can be controlled and avoid, the high winds and those things that are normal circumstances that may result in a knockdown. I think, if it were a common occurrence and if it were something that was anticipated would be occurring with any kind of regularity whatsoever, the kind of dollars that are invested in this project wouldn't be spent for something that a storm might knock down into the Chesapeake Bay. There are others who are give you a much more sophisticated answer than that, if you'd like to hear it.
But it has been something you all have considered in the marine environment.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Dad, I'm sorry, Mr. Commissioner. I think that was the same point I was trying to make, Mr. Tanker, that if it is part of the design of the structure to withstand that, I just want to make sure that's confirmed on the record today as we go forward.
Thank you. Any further questions? John, do you have anyone else who wishes to speak?
No, sir. Unless my,
okay. All right. Thank you. Any opposition to the project? Yes, sir.
I don't have opposition, but there's about six questions I think need to be addressed by someone.
Come to the mic, please. Let me swear you in. Can you raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear the testimony you'll give today to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Tom Best. I'm a resident of Chesapeake. I didn't come to this meeting for this purpose, but several things jump out at me. I would think FAA approval would be required from the Federal Aviation Authority. You've got the Menhaden aircraft looking for fish all the time. You've got private aviation that are under visible flight rules. Even at 470 feet to the top of the tip, that's pretty high for something, you know. So that would be my number one, FAA. And the second one related to that is warning lights. It'd be easy to have them at the hub, but how do you get something up another 220 feet? I mean, is there a light on the tip of the blades, or could or should there be? FAA is number one to me, and I'm not a pilot. Is there possibly, this is a scientific question, a local, meaning not more than maybe a mile, very low or very high frequency emitter that would be anathema to birds, like the little things people have on their pickup truck for deer? This sends out a whistle or that people can't hear. That would be number two. Number three, aside from the dragging anchor issue, the 6 foot depth, could it also be, because it's quite a power signal, the electromotive force buried that deep, or maybe should go deeper or whatever, because of electromotive force issues or generated by the electricity in the cable, just like you have people can stand under high power electric lines with a neon or with a fluorescent light in their hand and it will light up. Number five, will the state or local or both receive real estate property taxes? I would think the state, since we're talking state waters, but it would sound to me like there should be real estate taxes involved or a specific exemption for some valid reason, like research, you know. And the last one that came to my mind as I listened was, I assume that this is directional, meaning you can turn it to be of the most advantage. Is it shut down during extremely high winds, or does in fact the motion act as a stabilizing force, like a gyroscope, meaning it's better to keep it running during storms? Shut down at a certain wind velocity. The last item, I'm sorry, one more item. Well, I'll talk to these gentlemen later about a way of perhaps minimizing the water column issue, the disruption issue. Just some questions that I thought of as the presentation went on. FAA is the number one.
Thank you. We'll see if we can get some response to those questions. Tony?
Can you make him answer some more questions? I think I can get on some of the background on those five questions, and of course, the applicant can fill in.
We'll hear from the applicant after you.
But I would want to point out that the Mesa did a tremendous amount of homework on this project.
And this is the application booklet. It was sent to us in hard copy and provided in CD. In fact, the application information here is on our website. So if you want to go to the agency website and see the detailed information that was included, you can do that. With regard to the issues that were just asked about, the questions that were asked, I would say that they're covered in here to some extent. The FAA, there is some FAA approval required. It's covered in here. There are some criteria that you have to meet below 500 feet and some criteria you have to meet if you go above 500 feet. They're within that first category, but they have to meet those lighting requirements. And I think some things have to be published, you know, in the charts and information for aviators. With regard to the birds, while it wasn't required under the permit by rule, the applicant did a tremendous amount of a study on bird utilization in the area. That's covered in here. They went above and beyond with regard to that. I'm not aware of any device on the turbine that acts as a sound deterrent to keep birds away, but the general consensus is it's not going to be a significant threat to birds because of its location on the eastern shore, and the flyway from the eastern shore to the mainland is a tremendous resource and provides quite a bit of bird migration through that area. This is a bit outside of that. So that's not thought to be an issue, but I think some of the bird experts feel that this is an opportunity to look at something in this environment and sort of begin to assess what there might be some of the issues and the mitigation circumstances in the future. The depth of the cable, the electrical signals that it might be generated, that's covered in here. As current passes through a line, it produces an electric field around it, as you well know from your physics classes. And it's thought that the casing around the cable and the depth to which it's buried, there would not be a significant amount of electromagnetic signal in the water column. I guess some sharks and elastomers, elastobranchs, if that's the right scientific term, may sense certain things, but they don't think it's at a level that it would cause any problems with fishery utilization. The property issue taxes, this is state submerged lands. It's not within the local jurisdiction. They won't be dealing with property taxes on this. In fact, there was an AG opinion with regard to the permit by rule and what the local authority is over it. So there won't be that kind of property tax, but I would suggest that the royalty gets at that for allowing use of state submerged lands. And, of course, as John pointed out in the conditions that we had proposed, the royalty schedules and need for royalties may evolve with wind generation facilities in state waters as we see this industry mature, and we might identify future royalty types of payments for these types of facilities, but that's covered in the opportunities to revisit that issue in the permit document, we think. And lastly, the high wind issue, this is more of a technical component, but as I understand it, certainly rotates with the wind to catch the wind. And as high winds are encountered, that turbine starts to blades feather. They can move in and out. And at very high speeds, at a certain speed at which it stops, it cuts off and fades. The blades are feathered, and the wind just goes around it. So, again, very technically advanced design. I think in response to the previous question, those have been considered by the applicant in designing this structure for more extreme environments than even the bay mouth in the Atlantic Ocean. And so we feel like, you know, they really did their homework. It made it a lot easier for staff and our review of this, and I think that's why it's coming to you today with the encouragement for recommendation that it has. With that, I'll be glad to answer any other questions.
Tony, I think you hit all of the questions with the exception of the warning lights. What do you know about the warning lights?
My understanding is a warning light, and this is where the applicant may fill in, will be placed on the nacelle at the top of the tower, but I don't think there will be lights on the tips of the blades. That's the applicant just confirmed that that's the case.
Any further questions? You satisfied with those answers, I assume? Okay. Any further comments from the public on this project? Any further questions from the commission? It matters before the commission. I would say...
Right here, how about liability insurance, naming the state and the federal government as additional insured?
Tony?
We have a hold harmless clause in our permit with regard to when a permit's issued to an individual that applies to their responsibilities. And with regard to, well, it's not insurance. I mean, they're responsible. The decommissioning plan and the bond that's established, we ask them to, what's it cost to take that thing down?
you know, if it becomes a problem, well, I don't say a problem, but it's no longer used. And they came up with a $2 million-plus figure that's in the permit document, so we think that that's covered through the bonding requirements and the decommissioning plan.
Tony, this project could have been placed on page two, given the fact that we didn't have any opposition.
Yes, sir.
And it's here today because of the unique nature of the project. This is the first one of these that we've seen. We probably are going to see more in the future. And the unique nature of the conditions that will be attached to the permit.
Yes, sir. Both factors. In fact, we felt you needed a full briefing on this project, given the magnitude of the project. But just as importantly, the conditions that we have come up with here in working with the applicant to recognize our responsibility as stewards of state resources, as certainly John articulated. And we wanted the commission to hear those in detail and debate those to make sure that you were comfortable with those. And so that's the reason we spent this hour briefing you on this project and
thank you.
The details.
Thank you. The matter's before the commission.
Mr. Schick? Yeah, I just move to approve the 12-0149 and as stated with the conditions also as discussed in the presentation by staff.
The motion to approve the project, seconded by Mr. Robbins. Comments on the motion? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The applicant's counsel described this as a case of first impression, and I think that helps to underscore the historical significance and importance of this project, particularly if you reflect on the history of energy development in the state and how the state is trying to make progress on the development of renewable energy on an ongoing basis. And so, you know, I think contextually this is a very important project. The state and the industry stand to learn quite a bit from it. The council had also suggested that the conditions that are laid out in the statutes are more than met here. You know, I think the conditions that are included in here as part of the permit do reflect the fact that there's been a very constructive dialogue between commission staff and VIMS and the applicant, and I think a lot of work has gone into that. And the fruits of those efforts are pretty clear here in the staff evaluation and the fact that there's been a consensus reached between the applicant and the staff on these details that I think ultimately will contribute to our understanding of the important elements of how these are going to operate, and you know, including things like the acoustical study, for example. I think it is an important thing to understand before wind energy is scaled up on a large scale, which you know appears to be something that hopefully is in our near future. But again, I think it's a very important project. I think ultimately the siting of these projects is where the rubber meets the road in terms of being very important as we consider the other uses of the state-owned bottom in that area, the recreational and commercial uses. I think the fact that they buried the cable to a depth of 6 feet should prevent any interactions that would be adverse between recreational or fisheries-type uses. I think that's important. I think also back when we had the original siting consideration, you know, there were concerns expressed by the Maritime Association and also by the Virginia Pilot Association, but in this case, the applicants were very responsive to that. They adapted. They modified their plans. And so I think that adaptive posture has served them very well here, and I would be pleased to support the motion.
Further comments on the motion, Mr. Tank?
I only have one comment, being the only one left here from the Eastern Shore, so I figure better say something or other about the project. And that would be the turbine is scheduled for late 2013. As you know, Cape Charles is a fishing town, and recreational boaters who come from all over the east seem to come out of Cape Charles and really don't know where they're going. They aim for Plantation Light and hope that they're going to catch some fish around the light that some people call Christmas tree. So I think I urge you to be careful of those boaters who are not always so aware of their surroundings in that area at that time of year.
Other comments?
That's my
ready to vote. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Chair votes aye. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Appreciate your thoroughness.
Thank you.